Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Welcome to episode 15 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael Metzinger. That is Dane Davis right there, the infamous co-host of the show. And we're so happy that you're joining us this evening. Our last episode, I think, was right at the beginning of July, and we're now, yeah, I think, 100 days out from the 2020 election, or it might be a little bit more than 100 days.
No, I think it's 100.
Is it 100 today? Yeah. So yeah. Good timing. And we do have a lot to talk about.
We do.
There's a major corruption scandal hitting the state of Ohio with the Republican Speaker of the House, Larry Householder. So we're going to go into that because it's a fascinating story, but it's also fascinating. And Dane touched on this in one of our first episodes as to how Householder got into the position of Speaker of the House. And I have an article I'll read some quotes from related to that, but he had to use a coalition of Republicans and Democrats to get the speakership, or whatever it's called. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that and that corruption scandal. Then we're going to talk about the big congressional race in my district, Ohio 13, between Tim Ryan and Christina Hagan. Since our last episode, President Trump has come out to endorse on Twitter Christina Hagan, which is a big thing. I mean, this is a district that has been blue for a long, long time. Tim Ryan has been the congressman for, let's say, what, 18, 19 years now. So he's been in for a very long time. And obviously this is a still a relatively blue area, but it's a district that Trump only lost, I think, by maybe 6 or 7 points in the 2016 election. So we're going to go into that. We're going to talk about the state of the 2020 election between Trump and Biden. And maybe we'll even touch on like the U.S. Senate and how that's shaping up. And then we're going to close out talking about COVID-19, something that we thought was gone in our episode, a couple episodes ago, when we talked about the killing of George Floyd, because we thought it was gone because the media stopped covering it. But now that the protests have ended, it's now back to the forefront. And I have some theories on that. And I have some interesting data that the media is never going to tell you guys. And these are hard numbers from worldometers.com or .info. It's a legitimate website, I swear.
Okay.
Yes, it's a tracking website for COVID-19 cases and deaths and all that. So before we get started, Dane, any initial thoughts before we start talking?
Well, Michael, I'm honored to join you with you on this 15th episode. This was your gig going back like 15 years ago. And I kind of, like a parasite, just kind of infiltrated this your website and kind of like glommed onto it. So I'm honored that you haven't kicked me off yet. So thank you for that, number one. Can you hear me all right?
Yep, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. Number two, this episode is brought to you by the care emoji. I don't think we've done enough to really analyze the care emoji, and given all that's been going on in the world, like the care emoji is needed now more than ever before. But Mr. Care Emoji has sponsored this episode. I don't know if you know that, but I think it's a Mr. Do you think that, are emojis boys? Are they girls? What are emojis? What sex are they?
Whatever pronoun you want to use.
No, but are emojis, like, I think when I think of emojis, this is a good question for the chat. I don't want to derail it. But when I think of emojis, I think they're guys. Like, I think they're boys, right? I think they're men. I don't know if they're men or boys. I don't know their age. But I don't think the emojis are girls unless they're specifically like something girl-like, like a ribbon on their head or something like that. I don't know. I wonder if anybody else assumes the gender of emojis. I'm really curious as to what people think about that, because it's pretty crucial. But anyways, you go ahead, Michael. What's topic number one?
First off, I do apologize in advance if people are – if I have some issues with my video stream tonight. My internet is just trash the last few weeks. I think I'm in the need for a purchase of a new router. So I apologize if it keeps going in and out.
Yeah.
Also, today's beverage of choice, thanks to my brother Christopher, is a Bud Light Lime.
Oh, wow.
Very refreshing.
Very multicultural.
I've never had one of these before, but it goes down pretty easily.
Wow.
So for the people who are tuning in, if any of you by any chance want to participate and actually want to join us live, just send us a message on Facebook and we'll send you the link and you could join us. And whether you want to share your video or audio, it's up to you. But we welcome, you know, hearing from people. In addition, by all means, load up the chat room with any comments, questions throughout the evening. We always try to respond to them. We want to try to make this as interactive as possible. So let's begin. Fingers crossed my connection doesn't go out again here. So let's talk about this major corruption scandal involving Company A, which is First Energy, the big electric provider in the state of Ohio. And the Ohio Speaker of the House, Larry Householder, he's a Republican from Southeast Ohio. It's a town called like Glenford or Glendale or something, Ohio. It's right off of Interstate 70. And three others, including the former Ohio Republican Party chairman, I think his name's Matt Borges. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Which, although he is the former Republican chairman, it was announced late last week that he also is starting a super PAC for Joe Biden in the state of Ohio, I believe. Yeah. So he's a Kasich Republican. So I want to put that in the proper context of the really bizarre nature of the Ohio Republican Party, because it's not your typical Republican Party in terms of what you see of in Washington. There's a lot of, I hate to say dysfunction, but there's a lot of going at it between DeWine at the top and then Householder on the House side. And then Ob Hoff, who is the in charge of the Senate. So this the FBI announced, I think again it was Monday or Tuesday of this past week, that there's a $61 million corruption scandal involving those individuals. Where it relates to, though, is a major piece of legislation. I want to say it was early last year in 2019. It was called, I believe, House Bill 6. Is that correct, Dane? Does that sound right?
That is correct. Yes. House Bill 6.
Yep. So this is a piece of legislation. Yep. Okay. So it's a piece of legislation that and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it provided subsidies to First Energy to keep two nuclear power plants open in the state of Ohio, and it's subsidized on our electric bills. Does that sound correct to you?
There's a lot to it. There's a lot to it, but that's the gist.
I'm simplifying it in the...
So essentially there are two nuclear power plants that are owned by First Energy. They were reaching the end of their life, right? So nuclear power plants have like a 30-year lifespan, and then they need to put more money back into them or they're no longer able to keep running. So they were reaching the end of their life. For whatever reason, First Energy couldn't get a loan in the private market, or they didn't have the finances to support it. So they asked the state for a bailout, and they said that they would shut down both of these power plants unless they got a bailout, direct money from the state to keep it going. So that was point number one. But then the other thing that they did in House Bill 6 was they eliminated a lot of green energy mandates, and they gave people like a refund on their energy bill. I wish I had an energy bill right here, but there's like a little line that will say like refund credit or something like that. And that's largely due to House Bill 6. So there were very interesting coalitions when it was passed, right? Because you had some Tea Party groups who opposed the state bailing out a private company, right? State socialism, I guess you could literally is what it was, the state bailing out two nuclear plants. There were those groups. So the conservative right was split, and there were also the groups that wanted to keep it because they wanted to keep the jobs. You had environmental groups that were for it because they wanted nuclear energy. You had environmental groups that were against it because it eliminated the green energy mandates. You had energy producers that had natural gas production that were against it, right, because you'd be subsidizing one of their competitors in the form of nuclear power, et cetera. So it was a very, very contentious bill that Larry Householder forced through. And one thing to keep in mind for listeners, you know, you might be like, well, you know, who cares about Ohio politics? Larry Householder was one of the most influential speakers of the House anywhere in the country. He had a massive $1 million-plus war chest, and he ruled the House, the Ohio House Representatives, with that iron fist. And in many ways, he was the guy that ran the state of Ohio, even, you know, more so than DeWine, right? He was a very influential guy. But I'll turn it back over to you. Yeah, that's the background behind it.
So what? So to provide a little bit further background, and that was a great day. So Householder, from what I discovered, was the former – was he the former Speaker of the House?
Yes,
back?
Yes, he was.
It looked like from – oh, yeah, 2001 to 2004.
Yeah.
He resigned at the time due to alleged corrupt activity, which sounds like it might be a pattern with this individual. Again, the important thing is the presumption of innocence. I get that. But we're just spelling out the details here. So then in 2016, he won back his position in the 72nd district in Ohio, and he had his eyes on the Ohio speakership. But in order for this to happen, and this is really where the whole corruption scandal kind of starts up. First Energy, this bill, this House Bill 6, essentially has been stalled at the state house level for, sounds like a number of years. Mm-hmm. They needed somebody in the state house to advance this piece of legislation because it's important to them. They were looking for, I believe it's quoted as legislative solutions to advance this piece of legislation because it's been critical to them for the future of these nuclear power plants. So they had to, find a way to get Householder, who was behind this piece of legislation, make him the Speaker of the House. And in doing so, they needed to get behind candidates who vowed to support this piece of legislation. I believe they identified there might be 20 or so candidates that maybe received funding from this First Energy entity, but it's really not a First Energy entity. It sounds like it's an entity that essentially it's called Generation Now.
Generation Now, yeah.
Yes, FBI is saying that this sounds like an organization essentially that was run by Larry Householder, if that's a review.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
No. So keep going, laying out that. So here's why the corruption's really bad, right? Essentially, what First Energy did was they bought the Speaker of the House. They're alleged to have done, right? We don't know. They are alleged to have bought the Speaker of the House, and the Speaker of the House, through this group and through all of his money and power in that, is alleged to have bought this bill. They bought a bill, right? So we had in Geauga, we had a representative named Sarah Lotterette. Sarah Lotterette, her father was Steve Lotterette, who's a federal congressman, right? And she was against Householder. And he basically, the thing with Householder was he ruled with an iron fist. If you opposed him, you got like a closet for an office, right? And the Speaker of the House also controls, to my knowledge, the apportionment of like office funding. So like he could control whether or not you had legislative assistance or not, or what office you were at or not. So if you support him, you got a good office. If you didn't support him, you were like basically working on the parking lot. Sarah Lotterette resigned for reasons I won't mention here, but they're pretty well. Sarah Lotterette resigned, and I was personally involved, so was Shanley, with a battle against Larry Householder, the guy that is now alleged to have been taking $60 million in a corrupt enterprise. Because Shanley, as an executive committee woman for the Geauga County GOP, her and the rest of the Geauga County GOP nominated Dennis Galicki to fill that seat, right? And Larry Householder interviewed a bunch of candidates and picked his candidate, Diane Grandel, who he had previously served with, and put her in office. And then surprisingly, she voted for House Bill 6, purely coincidental. And there was just a really acrimonious primary here in Geauga County where she ran against Frank Hall. And Montel Williams, yes, that Montel Williams actually attacked her on Twitter. randomly enough, I swear to God. Yes, Montel Williams. And she ran against Frank Hall. Frank Hall was the guy that stopped the Chardon shooting. Anybody remember the Chardon shooting from like 8 years ago where there was a mass shooting in Chardon? Frank Hall was a coach who charged the guy and brought him down, stopped more people from dying. Ran against Diane Grandel. And that Generation Now group was giving dark money to support Diane Grandel and against Frank Hall. Shanley and I never supported her because I don't think somebody who's completely out of touch with local politics should be in the seat. She's 70 plus years old, right? It's time for new blood. And Dennis Glicky is a really fine guy. He should have been in that seat. But so we personally have had to deal with Larry Householder. But the bigger topic is like, what happens to Ohio politics now?
And that's going to be the fascinating thing to really watch is how this is going to unfold. But we only on the surface know this much. Just I guess provide some further context to kind of come up with this whole $61 million figure. $2 million was of First Energy's money went into 20 races to support candidates that were, I guess, in favor of House Bill 6. $17 million was funneled to this Generation Now entity. While the bill was pending within the Ohio Senate, I'm not sure how those funds were spent. $38 million was poured into stopping a piece of, I guess, maybe a ballot initiative to stop House Bill 6. And then another $4 million was used for advertising purposes. A considerable amount of money for a company that I believe just came out of bankruptcy this past year. Does that sound correct to you?
Yeah, they were in bankruptcy recently. It makes you ask, maybe they should have spent that money on running the business. Right? Here's the deal with House Bill 6. I understand both sides. There are people that are for it because they don't want these communities to suffer, right? The nuclear power plant and both of the communities, the two are, they provide, I think, 9,000 jobs. And they're probably pretty high-paying jobs to work at a nuclear power plant. So I get why some people would be in favor of keeping them going. Also, it keeps the Ohio energy production diversified. Nuclear power kind of does need to be subsidized to keep running, et cetera. So I understand the arguments for it and sympathetic for it. But at the same time, I have to say, the Republican Party claims it's the party against socialism. And here they are. They get elected into power and they're bailing out a energy company, right? Why can't First Energy take a loan? I don't understand why they can't take a loan, take some sort of asset-based loan from a bank. I don't understand why there are no private lenders. Or why don't they sell some of their equity to some other private group in order to raise money to refurbish the nuclear plants? Like, why does the state need to get involved? Maybe that's my lack of familiarity with the details. But I do think it's hypocritical of the Republican Party that says to, some young person who made bad decisions in their life and they're poor and they're relying on the state for support. No, you're on your own. You're a freeloader because you want a couple $100 a month from the state. But a giant energy company with billions of dollars in revenue, oh, don't worry. We can support you and we can bail you out. It rubs me the wrong way. It's really – it leaves a sour taste. And if it kind of undercuts the whole message, right? If you're doing the whole small government thing, it has to be small government for everybody. If First Energy cannot find the money to keep those nuclear plants running, well, then they got to shut down, right? That's just the reality. The state didn't bail out the steel plants. They didn't bail out Lordstown, right? They didn't bail out anybody else. Why do they get a bailout? I don't know. That's my thoughts.
Excellent question. So another fascinating thing, again, we've talked about the whole interesting dynamics in terms of the Ohio Republicans. This issue essentially kind of pitted some aspects clean energy against clean energy because there is a large natural gas plant that was built, was it $1 billion close to your hometown of Newton Falls in Lordstown, Ohio?
Yeah.
And the same entity, I believe the same entity or maybe a second entity, was planning to build a second one there. And when this piece of legislation was signed into law by Governor DeWine, they announced that they were no longer going to build the second natural gas plant. So it's pitting nuclear energy against natural gas energy. And again, that goes to the core of like this clean energy that the Republicans are behind usually in touting. And so, it's a very fascinating thing, but what is mind-boggling to me is how I don't want to use it incompetent. Like, did these people really think they weren't going to get caught? It just, I don't know.
Well, I look at somebody like Diane Grandel. Diane Grandel is our local representative. Diane Grandel, she gets into office. Larry Householder appoints her. She didn't even go for any of the interviews. So she wasn't even interviewed by the local party, right? She kind of flouted them, and Householder just puts her in there like a lord, right, being appointed over some distant county, and then she goes ahead and votes for it. And then we have an acrimonious primary where we try to kick her out, and she gets 53% of the vote, so she kind of got away with it. And you know, she probably won't run again. She'll run in 2020, and then she probably won't run in 2022. Because she did what she needed to do, and now she'll be retired. It's nasty corruption. It's really nasty. My point of view is, if the state of Ohio believes we need these two nuclear plants to continue to run, then we should nationalize the plants. We should. The state of Ohio should buy an equity stake. If First Energy is like, hey, we need this money, no sweetheart loans, no sweetheart bailouts. No, the shareholders have to pay up, and they have to have their shares diluted by the state of Ohio buying, say, a 20% equity stake, okay? Similar to what the government did with GM or something like that. If you really need this money, and the state of Ohio determines that it is important enough that we need these nuclear power plants, then we should get a share of that company, 20%, 10%, 15%, whatever their value is on the accounting. And then we should own it. And then, you know, in 10 to 15 years, the taxpayers should sell it. I'm sick of these loans, though. That's what I don't like, are the loans. Let's get outright ownership. I know that's literally socialism, but if you don't want socialism, then don't ask the government for help. That should be it, right? Because the taxpayers should have to be able to make money from it. With a loan, when you give it very low interest rates, the taxpayers are losing money, or they're coming out flat because the inflation's eroding the value of the loan.
That's all fair.
Yeah.
So another aspect of this is the local impact, if there really was any. So to provide some context, much of the Trumbull County delegation, especially the southern portion of Trumbull County, is run by local Democrats, and the city of Youngstown and part of Austintown are in a district by another Democrat, Michelle Lepore-Hagan, whereas the southern part of Mahoning County is in a district for Republican who had passed away, Don Manning, who ended up supporting this piece of legislation. But I believe that Mahoning Matters, an online news organization, did a great article, which I will post in the chat, where it says, let's see here, in terms of if there's any local impact with the money hitting any local candidates. And they said those candidates are not identified in the affidavit. The FEC filings indicate the districts in which the ads were spent, none represented the Mahoning Valley, but reached neighboring Stark County. So although I believe Don Manning actually ended up receiving money from Larry Householder, it was to the tune of $1,500. So it wasn't a significant amount of money by any stretch of the imagination. It didn't seem like he was the ones involved in this. They're probably, I'm guessing, the names of the 20 races that a significant amount of the $2 million was poured into is going to come out in some time. But at least it sounds as though the impact wasn't felt at a local level, obviously with our history of corruption in our area. But another aspect I really want to touch on real quick was the fact that, and I mentioned this in the introduction, was how Householder became Speaker of the House. And it was, I believe, in Cleveland Plain Dealer, a great article on cleveland.com, where it talks about the silence of the Ohio Democrats as they helped get a Householder his position. And it says, long story short, I'm not going to read the whole article, but a snippet was, with that, the majority of the House Democratic caucus was intertwined with whatever happened to Householder. They're complicit in putting him in power. It's part of the reason Democratic social media was so quiet throughout Tuesday. And it was interesting because you would think, and this Cleveland.com article really goes into this whole idea of, oh, Republican corruption in the state of Ohio in a 2020 election year, this should be a slam dunk for the Democrats. And then they hit you with that aspect and they said, no, the reason Householder is the Speaker of the House right now is because he was able to get 26 Democrats to vote for him. And I have the actual results. It was him against a Republican named something Smith.
Yeah.
Householder got 26 Republicans and 26 Democrats to vote for him, whereas Smith got 34 Republicans and 12 Democrats. So the Smith actually got more Republicans to support him, but because Householder was able to get 26 Democrats, he was able to get this position. So just another aspect of this, again, to provide some context of this, how fascinating Ohio politics is currently.
Yeah. So Larry Householder was completely backed by the Democrats. There was a more conservative Republican but he couldn't get a majority of the Republican caucus. So Larry Householder got a plurality, the other candidate couldn't get a majority of the House. He got a majority of the Republicans, but not a majority of the House. So that's what you need to become Speaker. Larry Householder was able to get the Democrats, and he made a deal with them, right? A Faustian bargain, where he basically said to them, I'm going to give you more committee representation, and I'll ask, you guys have a greater voice, and in return back me for Speaker, right? So the Democrats kind of look dirty in this too. And the opposition in support of House Bill 6, it kind of scattered the party lines, right? It wasn't very red versus blue. It wasn't that neat. There were a lot of people on the red side that were against it. There were a lot of Republicans for it. There were Democrats against it, Democrats for it. So it's one of these issues. It's one of those beautiful issues where it's all about local corruption and not about party politics, right? Because both parties really are out to screw you at the end of the day. And I say that as somebody that obviously votes and supports one party. But, you know, they're both out to get you. You know, you can't trust either. I mean, you can't trust politicians in general. That's my general philosophy. I'm sorry. I don't know why people look up to politicians.
No.
These people, they're in it for power and for fame. They're not moral leaders. You know, I vote for politicians to have policy enacted, not for my moral lessons, right? I don't need to do that rant again.
I mean, yeah. No, we had that on another episode, but it's true.
Yeah.
Between both parties, there are plenty of individuals who lack good morals, but, and it's unfortunate, but we're not going to go down there. So one last item I just wanted to touch on related to this was, I remember when this bill was being debated, and there was a ton of advertising for and against it on the radio. And I believe the angle First Energy or this organization took was something with China. Do you recall exactly how it was?
Yes. They said that China was buying up the Ohio electrical grid, and then we needed to bail out the nuclear plants to prevent China from buying it up. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because I remember hearing these ads, and as somebody who follows obviously politics pretty closely, being that we have a political podcast and all that, even I was conflicted as to even what to believe.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah.
And I still would love to know. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot more that's going to come out, hopefully. And now there's a big push to repeal the piece of legislation. It was interesting. DeWine on Wednesday said he was in favor of keeping it in place. And by Thursday, maybe he had some sort of epiphany of sorts. And he decided that, you know what, although he believes in the heart maybe of the legislation, the way it was passed and signed in the law, he can't get on board with it. And he believes that maybe it should be repealed and replaced with some other piece of legislation. I have a hard time believing if it gets repealed that it's going to be replaced with anything to support First Energy, because it just sounds like they just tried to buy a piece of legislation going through and buy 20 plus races. So I think there's going to be people on both sides who are going to be hesitant to support any sort of replacement, but I suppose nothing will surprise me based on how this scandal took place. Another item of note was how here in Mahoning County, my state senator, Michael Rooley, had come out against a piece of legislation. And I remember, I think he even maybe went on Ron Verbe's show to discuss it. But again, it just goes to the core of how this was not like a partisan issue in any way, but it had Republicans pitting each other, going after each other.
Yeah.
Which it seems to be happening quite a bit in Columbus.
Yes. Speaking of Republicans going after against each other, the next talk, well, no, that actually has nothing to do with the next topic of Christina Hagan versus Tim Ryan. Does it? Oh, there's one more thing on the Larry Householder thing. Householder was very anti-mask and he was very anti-shutdown. And as soon as he got arrested, the very next day, DeWine implemented the statewide mask order. Coincidence? I don't know, but pretty interesting at the least.
Yeah, another one final point on that was how, again, Democrats helped Householder get into this position of Speaker of the House. And I'm not sure how conservative Householder was versus maybe more moderate. I suppose – I think he caved on some things and compromised not to go after collective bargaining with the House Democrats. But, and I'm trying to think of the point I was just going to try to make in terms of this. And of course, I'm losing it right now. It'll come back.
Well, we go on to Christina Hagen.
Let's go back to that. And
I love ripping on Tim Ryan. Let's rip on Tim Ryan.
And hopefully, you know,
What's going on with Tim Ryan? Give me the scoop, Michael. I heard Tim Ryan was making some waves. He's in a fairly competitive race versus Christina Hagen, but there was something that he did that caused some local news. Tell me what's going on. I don't know.
So back on, let's get the exact date, because as Dane has found out tonight, I have provided links for everything that we discuss, because I'm not going to be accused of spreading fake news. So on June 23rd, Congressman Tim Ryan, along with looks like three other congressmen, two other congressmen and a congresswoman, wrote to Attorney General William Barr about
Bill Barr,
yes, about police brutality and just the kind of the state of the police in the United States. And the big point of contention was this line where it says police brutality and violence is now a leading cause of death among young men, particularly black men, who are nearly three times more likely to be killed by police than their white peers. We'll stop there. I'm not going to go through the whole letter, but essentially there's that point that he makes. So,
right.
Okay. He makes the point. Don't really think much of it because, you know, he's,
well, no, it's false. It's
absolutely. It is false, but again, you know.
And so let's be very clear. I have the letter up. I'm not trying to, just so everybody is very clear. The line says specifically, police brutality. Yeah, police brutality and violence is now a leading cause of death among young men, particularly black men. Okay, so it's now a leading cause of death among young men, particularly black men, who are nearly three times more likely to be killed by police than their white peers. And then he links to a study from Edwards, Frank, Hibbley, and my book, Esposito, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Well, I think maybe that the study is being misattributed or misquoted, because anybody, if you need to look up the amount of like people killed by the police, it's in the thousands, right? And so it's no way near the top of the leading cause of death. But anyways, keep going, Michael. I'm going to actually pull this up.
No, so that's fine. So what was really fascinating was about, let's see here, this was on July 16th. And let me see if I could pull up the actual, I think I have the actual PDF of it, so it's a little easier to read. Give me one second, everybody. So the Youngstown police chief, so again, providing context, Youngstown has a Democrat mayor, Tito Brown. His police chief is a man by the name of Robin Lees. And he took offense to Tim Ryan's letter. And what's interesting, again, Democrat mayor, Democrat city, the police chief is going after Tim Ryan pretty hard. And I unfortunately can't post this. I might be able to provide the link, but there was a quote in the article where, or his letter, where he says, let's see here. Police brutality and violence is now a leading cause of men. Let's see here. Oh, no, that was Tim Ryan's letter. Okay. As for the bullet points that call for immediate action, it's clear you don't know anything about current law enforcement training or standards that are in practice in the district you represent. You never took time to ask or research this matter before sending this insulting letter. There's plenty more to it, and if I could post the link, I will. But the Youngstown police chief, Robin Lees, just, again, taking Tim Ryan to task about his letter, where essentially he's saying that, first off, you're spreading nonsense about that accusation about police brutality in terms of black men. I love how he says here, it's clear you don't know anything about current law enforcement training or standards that are practiced in the district you represent. And let's see here. He also says the remainder of the accusations lack any proper context. This is a great line. I reviewed the footnotes provided and they amount to a lot of convoluted crap. Did you even read the references? I suspect the staffer collected the information to support the narrative. So a police chief in the city of Youngstown, you know, blue as blue can be, going after Tim Ryan's interesting. Another police chief in a smaller community just outside of Youngstown, Struthers. He also sent a letter in response to this to Tim Ryan, where he says research conducted by Bozeman and colleagues found that the use of force represents, 0.086% of over 1 million calls for service. He said that equates to 1 in 1,166 calls for service resulting in the use of force. So again, Tim Ryan sends this letter, go along with this whole, I don't know if anyone would call it anti-police, but this push to fund the police. There's a systemic racism in police departments, and he's going after and he's airing his grievances to Bill Barr. And I just find it interesting that these police chiefs take him to task on it.
Well, so Tim Ryan's lying, right? He's just a liar. And the fact that he sent that letter, I think, is embarrassing. And kudos to the police chief for pushing back to him. So let's pull up some statistics, right? I'm just pulling up. You should pull up the number of homicide victims. So this is in the United States. You roughly have between 10 to 15,000 homicide victims a year. Of those, and I'm trying to get to, here's the FBI homicide data table. So of those, I don't know if this is the victim. So there are 15,000 homicides, murder victims. Here we go. 15,000 homicides, 6,576 are white, 7,881 are black. Okay, so let's just use these numbers, right? So 7,881 homicide victims are black. People shot to death by the police, black on average is around 200, right? So you have 7,800 homicides out of a nation of 333 million. Black population is 13%. So let's do some real-time math here. Black population in the United States, roughly 43 million people. 7,800 homicides a year where the victims are black. Number of people shot to death by the police in the United States by race, roughly 200. So 200 out of 43 million people are shot to death by the police. Now, every single one of those may, in fact, be a tragedy. We don't know. We don't know if they were justified, unjustified, whatever. But I guess the where he basically said police brutality and violence is now a leading cause of death among young men, particularly black men, it's just not true. It's just factually incorrect. So shame on Tim Ryan. Shame on Tim Ryan for doing that. Right? I mean, where's the math wrong? Mm-hmm. It's fuzzy math. So here's my problem with Tim Ryan, right?
Facts matter,
right? Pulling out on it. Yeah, Tim Ryan, the problem with Tim Ryan is the district has become redder over time, right? But Tim Ryan's national party has become bluer. And as a result, there's this big divide between the district, which is moving slowly to the right, but ever so slowly, and Tim Ryan, who's going further to the left. And this episode, I think, was a great example of where there was that disconnect that showed through, that even to your point, a Democratic police chief and a Democratic mayor called him out and said, like, hey, this is completely off base.
Yeah. So, my eyes, Christina Hagen, I know, pounced on this as an opportunity to really push the pro-police, we'll call it platform, what have you. But I think it's an issue that could help her. If she could continue to paint, and hopefully, you know, if there's other police chiefs or maybe even some police unions come out against Tim Ryan and maybe even endorse Christina Hagen, I think it can make a race where – she has an uphill battle, but if she comes, if she pushes this pro-police agenda or idea, I think it could help her. I don't know if it's a winning issue. It's going to be enough to get her over the top. But I think it's an issue that could resonate with a good chunk of the 13th congressional district. Because again, I do want to add, in 2016, Trump lost his district by, again, I think 5 to 7 points, but Tim Ryan won the district by 25, 30 points. So there was a number of people who voted for Trump that also voted for Tim Ryan. Christina Hagan needs, I guess, first off, Trump to win the 13th congressional district. But by doing so, she also needs those same Trump voters to support her. And like I mentioned at the start of the show, Christina Hagan was endorsed by President Trump. I think it was on July 3rd. And I honestly don't think Trump would have just – he doesn't just throw endorsements out. This is the district that I understand. But there's however many races every year. And this is a district that has been blue as can be for how long. And obviously, I don't think he likes Tim Ryan.
No.
But I do think it's somewhat encouraging that he at least offered an endorsement for Tim.
No,
I mean, for Christina. Sorry.
I agree. It shows that it's on his radar, right? That he's willing to put a little bit of political capital in there to endorse her. So I think that's a good sign. Do you think, Michael, let me ask you this question, okay? Do you think this is the year the district flips red? Or do you think it's still 2 to 4 to 6 years away? Because I think it eventually does go red, right? If it stays. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think eventually it will become red. As it's currently drawn, no, I don't think in this election cycle, especially with at least based on the current state of the 2020 race, I don't think this would be the year. Now, if Trump's fortunes flip and become more positive as we near the election, and he ultimately does win Ohio, let's say again by whatever it was, 8 percentage points, if he could pull that off again, I think he's going to do so by getting more votes out of the 13th district and probably losing more votes down in like Franklin County, around Columbus, especially around that growing part of the state. But I do think it perhaps just, again, the way it's drawn, if Biden gets the voters out that he needs to, a large chunk of which are African-American voters that did not come out in a big way for Hillary Clinton, it's going to be difficult to flip this district red. But again, 6 points in 6 or 7 points in 2016 for a district that was whatever, 20, 25, 30 points pro-Democrat in the past, it shows it's moving in the right direction. And another aspect, and we've touched on on other episodes, has been Kasich, Republican, won the district. Portman has won the district. And I think maybe another Republican statewide has won the district as well. So it can happen, but it needs to happen, I think, in a really pro-Republican year. And I don't think necessarily that as it currently stands, it's shaping up that way.
Well, I think that's a good segue into the next issue, the update of the Trump versus Biden race, right? So I think that your take, basically, if I can summarize on Hagan versus Ryan, is that Ryan can be defeated. He is vulnerable, but it needs to be a really good year for Republicans. And the question is 2020 a good year for Republicans? All signs are pointing to no, but what do you think? What's your take?
I guess before I respond to that, so in 2016, Clinton won in the district 51-45. Portman won, the Republican, that same district 48-46. So that was, again, you know,
it's pretty tight.
Yeah, it was a tight national election, but it wasn't a tight Ohio race. But there was obviously enough Hillary Clinton voters that supported Portman over Strickland. So again, I think the idea maybe of a pro-police platform for Hagan could resonate with maybe some independents. I think here's the key. If she could pick off independents that don't want to vote for Trump who are going to vote for Biden, but also are resistant to the whole Democratic Party moving far, far to the left, I think that would be her path to winning the district. To your question, so you're asking kind of how I feel right now
about. Yeah.
So let's put this in proper context. We're 100 days out. I like to use it. Today's buzzword is context. We're going to count how many times I say context this episode. So we're 100 days out. Joe Biden still does not have a VP pick. I don't know, timing-wise, if that's how that relates to prior years. Do you have any idea with that? I just kind of find that fascinating. Nobody's talking about it.
Well, when did Hillary announce her VP? Let's Google this. Let's do some July 22nd.
Okay.
You know, it's Tim Kaine, the most bullying.
Okay, so I stand correct. It just seems late. I don't know. I think it's early. It's a bizarre year. You're not going to have – we have yet to have typical campaigning, which I think this year would greatly benefit Trump over Biden, because I think Trump would get huge crowds in Biden this whole primary cycle – and some small events since he essentially became nominee has had very, very small crowds. I think that that will be noticeable with voters. But Trump needs, I think, a normal campaign to win. He needs to be going from city to city, state to state, getting big crowds at these rallies, dominating local news coverage and regional news coverage and on TV, on radio, and print. He needs that, especially in the, you know, Rust Belt states down in North Carolina, Florida. And right now with this COVID-19 pandemic, which we'll talk about a little later on at the end of this episode, it's making it difficult for Trump to have a normal campaign. My fear is the longer this goes on, and I think here's where politics will come into play. I do think you're going to have some states, some governors of some states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, who are going to eliminate the possibility for any sort of rallies, which, again, I think is going to be political, but that's just my hypothesis. But I think Trump needs those. He needs a normal campaign. The longer this pandemic happens where he has to do virtual campaigns on Facebook Live, I don't think that benefits him. It benefits Biden in a big way. And where Biden is not on TV, it is greatly helping Biden. Biden's numbers have surged doing nothing, sitting in his basement, taking very few interviews at all. And his numbers have gone up. And we've hit this point numerous episodes. I think at least, if Biden is out there in public on a day-by-day basis, it's going to hurt him. What hurt Hillary? When Hillary dominated the news coverage in 2016, her numbers tanked. That's why it was huge after the Comey letter. It provided a segue of negative coverage for maybe some undecided voters. And I'm not blaming Comey's letter one way or the other for dictating the election, but it changed the narrative from Trump, Access Hollywood, to Hillary Clinton is corrupt. It changed the mindset where she dominated the coverage. And when Hillary dominated the coverage, her numbers tanked. Biden needs to be at the forefront, I think. He doesn't take interviews. He's not going to – he does nothing. He's had one press conference. I think if he gets out there, it's going to hurt him. And I think the Biden campaign's smart right now. Keep him hidden. That's a lot. I threw out some wild things there, but that's how I feel.
So, okay, I think a couple of points. I think Joe Biden has played the strategy well of just hiding. Right in his basement. That's literally been his campaign strategy. And the excuse is coronavirus. But I think we all know that there are severe mental issues with Biden. I've made fun of it in the past, but I think the guy is in some form of mental decline, right? I think that's much clearer. Like, I don't think anybody could argue that he's very sharp at his age. So, yeah, they're hiding him. They're hiding him as long as possible. I think they will cancel the debates. I think that's one thing Republicans need to completely prepare themselves for, because what I'm hearing is, and Republicans seem to believe, okay, Trump is down. Trump is down big time. He's losing the suburbs. He's gaining among the working class base. He still has that, but he's lost the suburbs. But don't worry, come the debates, we're going to close the gap, right? I think that might be an invalid assumption, though, because I don't think they're going to have the debates. I think they'll find any reason to cancel them. And the proof of this is you have to read the New York Times. You have to read the New York Times daily to understand what the left wing thinks in the United States and their op-ed pages. Because Thomas Friedman, who's really one of the most uninventive, boring writers out there, already floated the idea in one of his columns of what if we cancel the debates? Maybe we shouldn't have the debates. And they're kind of preparing it, and they're going to give you two arguments. One is coronavirus, right? We can't have two people interacting.
Which I personally think is bullshit. But
well, it's total bullshit, but they're going to try it. They will 100% try it. And the second is, well, we can't give Trump a platform because Trump espouses right-wing, you know, dangerous rhetoric, and we can't give him a platform. Therefore, we have to cancel the debate. And so I think that everybody feels like as long as there's a debate, Trump's going to pull it out, Trump's going to win it, right? But I think the Democrats are going to cancel the debates. I really, really do. I think they're going to cancel the debates. And the only debates you may see are Kamala versus Pence. And by the way, Kamala is, I'm assuming that's going to be his VP pick. I think she's probably the most likely candidate. I don't know.
Our prediction of President Kamala might come true after all.
Yeah, Kamala Harris just shows Kamala, the way she got in power was she had an affair with Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco. And Kamala was a nobody, and Willie Brown was the mayor, and Kamala dated him, and he appointed her to a bunch of high profile political positions. And she used that to build support, build net rank name recognition. And then she eventually ran on her own. But she definitely used her relationship with Willie Brown to get into power, which just goes to show, right? Like, if you want to be an empowered modern woman, the way to get there is to, you know, sleep with a very powerful mayor. And then he'll appoint you to cushy jobs that you're not qualified for. That's what Kamala Harris did. You know, people don't want to say that. Oh my God, that's offensive. But you know, behind her feminist rallying cry was she used her. That's how she got to the top. That's how she climbed that pole. Kind of like Hillary Clinton, right? Hillary was a very smart and capable woman, but she used her husband's charisma to naturally gravitate to the top, and then she, you know, found a safe blue state and became the senator of New York, and then got appointed Secretary of State, and the rest is history, right? I don't have a lot of respect for Kamala Harris. I think she's a reprehensible person. I like some Democrats. I like a lot of Democrats, but I don't like Kamala Harris. She's fake and phony and horrible.
Yeah, anyways. I think we discovered that after that one debate. I thought I was all in on her, but I like to use the word mirage. I think on the surface, she has it all, but attorney, African-American woman, United States Senator, California. She had a great first debate, and then, right?
Well, she
here
really,
we go. There.
Didn't she accuse Biden? This is what's really crazy. Does anybody remember
this? Yes,
It was about busing.
And she nobody's going to talk –
because Biden opposed busing, right? Forced desegregation. And she said, Biden, you know, when you oppose forced busing, that little girl was me. That was me who you were opposed, you know, racially integrating. And now she's going to be his VP. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, he hasn't made a pick yet, but we got a quote. Oh, it just popped.
Oh, yeah. Right, here we go.
Michael.
Yes, and this is from Kelly, who I believe is a member of the Mahoning County Young Republicans, talking about how Trump's losing suburbs all over suburbs around here. At least I've seen Trump sides, which I mean, obviously I live in the suburbs and of Youngstown. I think the suburbs of Youngstown in the Mahoning Valley don't necessarily coincide with the suburbs of many cities across America because of the education aspect.
Yeah.
We're a lot more we'll say uneducated, lack of a college education in the Mahoning Valley compared to other parts. Let's say the suburbs like Borman, Ohio, compared to what's a more like New Albany, Ohio, outside of Columbus. I don't know if that's a great scenario, but that's probably a much more educated suburb and educated individuals, it sounds like, or especially in 2016, and maybe even more so in 2020, seem to be more backing of the Democrats.
I heard this actually yesterday. Hudson, Ohio. Hudson's a very affluent, upper middle class suburb. Has always voted Republican. Everybody there, they're making six figures on average, right? The housing prices are very high. Hudson is an area that has always voted Republican for wealth reasons, right? Traditionally conservative area, but according to a lot of people who are making calls there, Hudson is, everybody wants to vote Biden in Hudson. I see it in Chagrin Falls. Chagrin Falls is a very affluent little town and traditionally a very Republican town, but now I see Biden signs all over the place. Whereas like in Ashtabula, Ohio, more working class areas, right? Ashtabula, Youngstown, and that, these areas used to be very blue. They're trending red. There's been like a little bit of a flip. If you're a yuppie, if you're upper middle class, right, you're like, oh my God, Trump's so outrageous. If you're a working class person, you're like, you know, I really don't care. I just don't want my job exported to China, right? And that's the difference in the arguments. And that's why he has support from one group and not the other. Fair. So that's, but I don't know. Things are changing. I've seen more Trump signs. So I think it's still very much in flux.
Yeah, I think I saw my first Biden sign today. But if you drive, especially around Canfield, which is probably the most affluent suburb of Youngstown, very much more wealthy compared to the rest of Mahoning County, was very pro-Trump. And there are a lot of Trump signs already out that I've seen thus far. I do want to respond, though. To your belief or theory that they might cancel the debates, I think that would be a grave mistake. And here's why I say that. I think we talked about this previously. I thought when Brad Parr Scales, is I believe that's his name, pushed for the idea of a fourth debate, which I thought was desperate at the time. I thought it was his way of backing the Democrats or locking them into the three presidential, one vice presidential debate. And again, it's just a theory out of the fear that a lot of conservatives have, which is what you just said, which is that they fear that they will cancel the 2020 debates. My thought is, I think it would cause a lot of issues for Biden. And here's why. Trump campaign is going to hit home on the idea of the cognitive issues. But why could they not have a debate? What's stopping two people from being on a stage with a moderator and a few cameramen and then a couple producers in a room from doing a debate? I think it would be just a giant cover-up of just trying to aid somebody who's clearly failing over the finish line. Just, you know, limping forward, you know, we got the lead. We don't want to have any mistakes because odds are that he's going to say something questionable and is like going to leave you scratching your head and going to lead to some doubt among independent voters of his abilities. But I don't know. I've heard this scenario presented and I just don't see a way possible where they would cancel the debates because I don't think COVID necessarily is a reason. But obviously the media does not want Trump to win. So I suppose anything is possible.
I think, you know, I think what they'll say, right, is, well, number one, he is a racist demagogue, blah, 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 blah. We can't give him a platform. That's number one. We can't give him a platform. Giving him a platform is tantamount to, you know, encouraging hate speech, whatever, right? But number two, I think they'll say, like, in this era of COVID, it's just it's too risky. And everybody else is socially distancing, so should you, Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden. And a virtual debate would accomplish basically the same thing as having no debate, right? Biden has to stand there for 2 hours in a room debating Trump live. That's what's really required for Trump to really win and to beat him. If not, then if it's just virtual, right, and they're in little squares, nobody's going to pay attention to that. Nobody's going to watch that. It's going to be boring. People will watch 5 minutes and then that's it. It'll be done. And the vibe will be off. And I don't think Trump would do well in the little Zoom squares, right? No. He's not going to do well either. He's going to do horribly. And then if they're both horrible, then it's neutral to watch.
Yeah. No, I get that. And I completely understand the argument of canceling the debates because 6 hours on stage against Trump. First off, Trump, I think there's maybe what, 3-4 years age difference between the two, clearly looks much sharper.
He does. I think
we could all agree, regardless of policies and all that, he clearly looks much sharper. 6 hours, though, of Biden on a stage without his notes. You know, when he was doing these interviews from the basement, he had like these set of notes, his notepad in front of him, where he was just clearly reading off of them. And obviously, I know you could have your maybe notes up there, but I think the optics will look a lot worse. And it just takes one or two things where he starts stumbling. And I think if Trump handles it well, not to like mock him or anything like that, illustrate the different, you know, make it known of, hey, there's a crisis, which we've had multiple crises with me as president. I don't care if it's 3 p.m. or 3 a.m. I'm ready to go. Can you really trust this guy in his state of mind? No offense. To have, what was the Sarah Palin line? The 3 a.m. phone call or whatever? 2
a.m.? No, that was Hillary. That was Hillary.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, again, I just think it would be I just think it would advance this idea of a giant. The media clearly wants Trump to lose. I don't even want to call it a cover up. I just think it would just look horrible. And I just think there's no reason why they would have to cancel. Like, I don't know how you can't socially distance on a stage. You just have fiberglass, or you just have people on two separate ends of a stage. You have the moderator somewhere else. There's no reason for it, but obviously I understand why, because in 6 hours, it's almost, you can almost bet plenty of money that he's going to say something questionable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is what they fear, because right now, nationally, again, he's still ahead nationally around 9 points. And it doesn't take much in my eyes for that 9-point lead to become 4 or 5 after one debate because of him saying something questionable, where it leaves this element of doubt inside voters where, hey, should I really trust this guy as president? Even though we kind of all know that we're probably voting for the vice presidential candidate on that side.
Yeah. Yeah, he. I don't think he'll. I don't think even if Biden wins, I don't think he'll finish a full term, right? Like, I think he'll. There's. I think it's very unlikely he serves out the full 4 years. He'll do 6 months, and then I think he even resigns because of health reasons after he wins, and then his VP would immediately become president, Kamala Harris, who I just don't think Kamala or whoever the VP is. We'll wait. We'll wait until he picks the VP. We'll have to do a whole episode on Kamala Harris and her shadiness.
Yeah. And probably by the next episode, we'll know for sure who he picks as his VP. So one last point on this, you know, for the liberals out there gloating at these poll numbers right now, just to provide
gloating
a big word context of the episode. Gloating. 2016, Hillary gloating. Clinton, after the Democrat debate, led by 7.9 points nationally on August 9, 2016. So, you know, in my eyes, post-convention, you know, Trump's down by, let's say, 9 points nationally. I'd like to see him cut it to 5 or 6 points post-convention. But again, 8-point lead for Hillary Clinton August 9th, a week after their 2016 debate. Not too far off from the 9-point margin right now. Secondly, although I know polling has come a long way from 1988 to 2016, on this very day, I saw this tweet. I'm just going to throw it out there for the hell of it. In 1988, Michael Dukakis led Vice President George Bush, H.W. Bush, by 7
George
points.
Butch. I like that. George Bush
by 17 points. And obviously, Michael Dukakis did not win that election. And he certainly obviously didn't win by 17 points. And he didn't even win the election. So, again, 100 days is an eternity in politics. We have two virtual conventions approaching, which I don't know what to make of those. And hopefully 3 presidential and 1 vice presidential debate. But I think we do have a long way to go. One thing I will say is this. I think the enthusiasm thing is legitimate. I think the Trump people, the core Trump supporters, really, really want him to win. I don't think there's a huge core Biden group that really are enthusiastic. So I think there's an element that his numbers are fragile in some way. I think a lot of his support right now is just anti-Trump versus pro-Biden. Do you know many people that are really like thrilled about voting for Joe Biden? At least I don't. And I follow plenty of Democrats on Facebook and Twitter who are posting nothing about him, and they're just posting anti-Trump stuff.
Yeah, let's be real. There's not a single person out there that's really enthusiastic about Joe Biden, even Jill Biden, right? She probably isn't even enthusiastic because she knows her husband's mental condition. I don't think there are a lot of pro-Biden people out there. He kind of won because everybody else immolated themselves in the primary, and he was the last man standing. It's all anti-Trump. It's completely anti-Trump. Now, whether or not anti-Trump is enough of a key motivator to get people out to the polls, I honestly don't know. We'll see. But there are very few people are pro-Biden. I mean, Trump, hate him or love him, he's got his core base of like 35% of the country, 40% of the country. And then the rest of the people either can't stand him or they're just like, they wish he would shut up, right? But they support some of the things he does. That's the Trump support. But Biden, nobody loves Biden. I mean, what's there to love? He's a mediocre politician. He's not even a very good politician. You know, you look at your list of good politicians, and I don't mean in terms of morally good. I just mean like good at being competent. Like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a very competent politician. He was very charismatic. He was very smart, very intelligent. Barack Obama was a very competent, extremely competent, charismatic politician in terms of doing the basic job of winning elections, right? You look at somebody like, Daniel Patrick Mooneyham was a really competent politician. I'm trying to think, Mitch McConnell. You can hate Mitch McConnell. You cannot like, and some days I really don't like Mitch McConnell. He's very good at running the Senate and like getting bills passed and stuff like that. Chuck Schumer is also he's really good at bringing lots of pork back to New York State, right? Andrew Cuomo killed thousands by sending them to the nursing home, COVID infected patients to the nursing home. But he's a good politician in terms of he has 70% support from New York State or 60%, right? He's competent at being a politician. Joe Biden's not a good politician. Okay, Joe Biden won the state of Delaware. There are like 12 people in Delaware. I'm serious. Delaware is not that competitive of a state. Okay, Delaware is not that remarkable of a state. Joe Biden is the senator from Delaware, and even that, I don't think he's particularly – I mean, they kept voting him in office, but like there's only 12 people in Delaware. You know, one of them has to be the doctor. One of them has to be the police officer. One of them has to be the fireman. And there's like no other – the least competent person is Joe Biden. And so he becomes the senator. He's not a very bright person. I don't think he's not intellectually gifted. He's not very charismatic. And the only reason America is even considering Joe Biden as president is because Barack Obama needed somebody that could appeal to the white working class. And Joe Biden has this stupid fake shtick, not S-H-I-T, but S-C-H, I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I'm from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I take the Amtrak into D.C. Oh, look at you. Hey, you dumb poor person. I take the Amtrak just like you. Let me give you a newsflash, Joe Biden. No working class person in America takes the Amtrak to work. Okay, there's not a single person that's like, yeah, every day I'm commuting via Amtrak, right? That doesn't happen. But that was his thing. Does anybody remember this? This thing was like, yeah, I live in Delaware and I still take the train into DC to work. It's like, oh wow, that's really great. I'm gonna go vote for you for president now. That's the only reason we're talking about Joe Biden. So sorry, he's just a mediocre guy. And listen, if Joe Biden wins, here's take heart, right wing America. Joe Biden wins. 6 months in, he'll resign. Kamala Harris will be president. Kamala Harris has all the charisma of like an orange, right? So not a lot. And in 2020, there'll be a massive backlash against her, and she'll have to deal with divided government, and we'll kind of be, it'll be like the Obama years part two. So that's the upside, right? But okay, sorry, I was just going off on Joe Biden, but he's so mediocre. Michael, he's so mediocre.
He is.
John Kerry had more charisma and that's ability than Joe Biden.
He's a loser.
Yeah. Tim Kaine reminds me of like Whiteout. You know, Whiteout. It's so vanilla and plain, and you use it to make things more plain. That's Tim Kaine. If ever there were a room where it's like, oh, there's too much spice in this room, you add Tim Kaine. If it's like, I got a Chipotle burrito and it's too spicy, I'm going to add some Tim Kaine, and then it'll have no flavor whatsoever. And Joe Biden is like, he's less likable than Tim Kaine. I think so. I think he's annoying. If I'm continuing, I'm sorry, Michael.
No,
I'm derailing your show. I hate when these politicians do this whole like, hey, I'm a member of the working class, just like you, right? And they're like, hey, you like, you know, hot dogs? I like hot dogs too. And like, they're millionaires, okay? They have massive pensions. They own stock in like 50 different companies you've never heard of, and they have outsourced your neighbor's job. And they are not working class people. And I hate when they try to pretend to be working class people. Okay. They're the upper middle class at best, upper class. You know, that's who they are. Joe Biden is not a member of America's work. Has Joe Biden ever even worked in a fucking factory? Sorry, pardon my language. Whoops. Has he ever worked in a factory? Right? Oh, I'm a working class kid from Scranton. And this is the thing they do. This is the thing they do. If they're not actually working class, they're like, well, my dad was working class. He was a working class guy, just like you, my dad. Well, hey, your dad's dead, dude. We're talking about voting for you. We're not talking about voting for your fucking father, okay? No, they all do it. They all do it. My father was an illiterate peasant from, you know, Hungary that came over in America, and he only ate radishes because, you know, he was so stupid. Oh, but hey, vote for me. I'm just like you. And the thing is, it's extremely insulting to working class people who are intelligent and are a lot smarter than anybody gives them credit for. You know, they don't read the New York Times every day, but they're a lot world wiser than people give them credit for. Sorry, I'm going to turn it over to you. I got to stop.
No, I don't mind your thoughts. So again, moral of the story, we got a long way to go. There's some key things that are going to come up. I'm not optimistic right now for Trump, but I do think his odds will improve greatly if A, the debates happen, and B, he could go out there on the campaign trail and provide some contrast with Joe Biden. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
So
to conclude the episode, we'll talk briefly about COVID-19 because the damn thing just won't go away.
COVID-19, working class. COVID-19 was working class. COVID-19's father did not go to college. It was a working class virus in China. So you should vote for COVID-19 because it understands what your life is like. You know, it's had a country club membership for the last 35 years, but it's a member of the working class because its great great grandfather once worked on a railroad thanks to COVID-19.
Oh God. I will say this to wrap up the final point and tie it into this one. I do think China could be a positive issue for Trump if he hits it properly, because I think Biden's going to do nothing with China. At least Trump clearly has a record of doing something about China. So now let's move on to the virus that came from China. COVID-19 that is back. It never really went away. But I guess there's been a second wave, as the media is portraying. Let me make this one point. And this is a political point. This is a hot take. Does anybody find it fascinating how 2 episodes ago we talked about the killing of George Floyd? COVID-19 went away for about 2 or 3 weeks with the media because of that. But why was that at the forefront and not COVID-19? Obviously, rioting and looting at night brings eyeballs to the TV. But I think the media obviously saw this as a huge losing issue for Trump, and they're going to hit home this issue, hurt Trump with it. And once that kind of went away, once the riots slowed down, stopped for the most part, then what's the next issue that's been hurting Trump? COVID-19. So now we're going to get back for now a month straight on COVID-19. Trump, they're just going to keep beating this drum. COVID-19, second wave. Anyways, so I think it's very important to provide some data, some numbers that the media is not going to tell you. Because if you're watching the media, who has done a tremendous job as governor? Andrew Cuomo.
He tells the stories about meatballs, grandma's meatballs, you know? He's so charming. Yeah.
Talks interesting.
Yeah. Andrew Cuomo is the best governor ever. Right, Michael? What are you going to tell me?
Greatest governor of all time.
I love him. I love him. Mm-hmm. I feel so mm-hmm. safe with him in control.
As,
you know? Yeah,
obviously, as you should. That's what the media tells us. So right. that is who the media just loves. Yeah. They love Andrew Cuomo.
He's probably the best governor ever.
Yes. Who does the media hate the most?
Oh, DeSantis. I hate Florida. Ron DeSantis. I hate him. I hate him. He's so smug. He's like a little Trump in Florida, and he's just killing off all the old people in Florida. You know, that's not fair. The old people just want to relax by the beach, and Ron DeSantis is just like walking into their rooms and just boom, 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 killing them all. Wow, what a horrible guy. So, okay, so Cuomo's the good guy. DeSantis is the bad guy. What are you about to tell me, Michael?
Media was waiting. They were just salivating to pounce on the opportunity to find one of these red states that opened up early to find the number spike. Georgia was the first, then Florida, then Texas.
Okay? Texas, all these states. Yeah.
They pounced on Florida, which is an interesting state because summertime, or actually any time of the year, it's a huge touristy state.
Oh, yeah. There's Disney World there, right?
Yeah, obviously. And Disney, beaches all over, you know, 3/4 of the state. So probably even more than that. So oh my God, second wave, Florida, these numbers are going up. But DeSantis early on said this, and he said it on Clay Travis's show. He's a sports guy on Fox Sports Radio. He says, listen, the age of our population says that we should have arguably the worst numbers nationwide, right? The median age of the state of Florida is 42.2 years, which is the fifth oldest in the United States of America. Okay, right?
Wow.
So right now, Florida, as of 8 o'clock, had 424,000 cases, okay? How many deaths, you may ask? Because I know that's the next question you're going to ask, Dane. 5,800 cases. So that comes to a mortality rate of what we have of the cases of 1.38%, okay? 1.38%. Let's go back to everybody's favorite governor, Andrew Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo.
Yes, Andrew Cuomo, who has 16,000 more cases, about 440,000 cases. How many deaths? 33,000. 7.43% mortality rate. The media makes you believe that New York State did it right. Fauci even said New York State did it right. Well, clearly they didn't do it right. 7.5% mortality rate in the state of New York. I hope my wife is listening. Florida. Don't believe the media fear porn with this. Florida, 1.38% mortality rate. But all you hear about is cases, 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 cases. Does anybody want to ask the question of what event triggered all of these spikes in all of these states, Arizona, California, blue state, may I add? What triggered all of these events? Are we just supposed to act like that big event the media covered for 3 weeks didn't have anything to do with it? Media couldn't
wait. What are you talking about,
you crazy conspiracy theorist? For the spiking cases in Tulsa, Oklahoma, for a Trump rally. But we're just supposed to act like what we saw on TV for 3 weeks across America in the streets didn't contribute to the spike. Are you serious?
Oh, Michael, listen, I know you're dumb, low IQ.
I had to let that out.
Yeah. So let me explain it to you.
My wife hears me. It looks like she's rolling her eyes at that emoji. I just want her to I love her. It's her birthday tomorrow, 28.
Happy birthday. 28.
Happy birthday, Ashley. Ashley is very, you know, she has taken major precautions with COVID. She's very worried. She loves Mike DeWine, but I just want her to know, and we do have disagreements on it, that don't believe what they say about Florida.
So
one more important thing before I want to provide further context. So Ohio, okay? This one's going to surprise some people, especially my wife. 84,000 cases. So we've been down quite a bit, but we've had a spike up in recent weeks. 1,500 cases a day. It was like 800s today. So 84,000 cases. You want to know how many deaths? 3,300. You know, I know the mortality rate of that. What that comes to?
I don't know.
3.9%. So again, the media frames these things in the context of DeWine's doing a great job, and I'm not taking shots at DeWine. I know a lot on the right hate him right now. I'm not going to go after DeWine. I take issue with some things, but I think he's doing the best job he can. But 3.9% mortality rate in Ohio. Everybody makes Ohio seem, you know, a lot of people, Ohio's doing a great job. Florida, 1.38%. That's quite the big difference there.
What about Texas?
Texas.
Always bigger in Texas.
Oh, yeah, you're seeing these numbers. Texas, 398,000 cases, mortality rate 1.3%. So, again, all I'm asking people is, listen, I don't even watch Fox News. I hardly watch any news. I read my news online. I don't watch Fox News. I'm not spewing right-wing talking points. I'm taking it, as I love to say to my wife, hard data. I'm an accountant. I'm a CPA. I look at numbers for a living. This is what I do for a living. This is what I love. Look at the numbers. Just do your own research. Don't believe what the media tells you. I'm not saying this is a pandemic that shouldn't take great precaution, but take some of what they say with a grain of salt. Sorry.
Well, listen, I'm going to listen. I know you're a low IQ conservative and, you know, you just watch Fox News all day and you read Trump tweets and you probably have never read a book like Harry Potter, which I've read because, you know, everything you need to know about the world you can find in Harry Potter's online book worth quoting. And also watching Star Wars and Marvel movies, they form the core of my moral being because I'm an Elaine liberal, Michael. So I'm going to tell you what's going on. So I don't know if you know this, but the BLM protests, I think that's what you were referencing, right? You were afraid to say it, but were you perhaps implying that the big spike in viruses across the country, especially among young people, was in some way attributable to the BLM protests? Is that what I was hearing?
We're very naive to believe. The media is very naive to believe that that didn't contribute in some way.
Well, no, you don't.
Regardless of what they want to say, there's plenty of video footage where it showed people shoulder to shoulder without mask on in major cities across the country, and it continues to this day.
Well, Yeah. So no, but you need to know when it's a political cause that we support, it doesn't spread the virus. So like, let me give you an example. I know you're really dumb because you're a conservative, right? It's funny how IQs always bring IQ, or it's funny how liberals always bring IQ into the matter, right? But we're going to do that. So if you go to, say, a Catholic church service and you're standing there in mass, that's spreading the virus. That's not good. No, that's bad. You're not allowed to do that because you're going to kill everybody there. Okay? It's horrible. If you're going into a first grade classroom and you're teaching young kids, everybody's going to be dead. It's going to be like Hiroshima times 1,000, right? So those are bad things. You don't want to do that. Now, if you go into a city public square and you throw a Molotov cocktail through a Starbucks, that's okay. The virus doesn't spread because the virus knows that you're protesting stuff and it's not going to spread. So let me give you some more examples. I can give you some more case studies. If you take a brick and you throw it through a small business, right? It doesn't spread the virus. Now, if you're standing in a big group of people and nobody's wearing masks, but you're protesting and you say, hands up, don't shoot. That doesn't spread the virus. If you're wearing like a t-shirt that's politically approved with some logo, like a rainbow flag, especially, does not spread the virus. Let me think of some more examples. Oh, that's right. Like in Portland, I don't know if you know, there are massive riots going on in Portland, Seattle as we speak. Doesn't spread the virus. In Chicago, there's this video of somebody like twerking. You know what twerking is, where you like shake your butt up and down?
That's something they do on TikTok?
Yeah, that's something they do on TikTok, yeah. And they do it in mass groups, right, with no masks on, right? And it doesn't spread the virus, though, because it's your freedom of speech, right? Those things don't spread the virus. Let me give you some more examples of what doesn't spread the virus. I really want your listeners to understand. If you and your wife sit down and like say prayer before eating dinner, that's spreading the virus. That's really, really bad, right? If you so much as like look at Ronald Reagan, spreading the virus, it's really bad. If you're out mowing your lawn, right, you're spreading the virus. That's really, really bad. The worst thing you could do to spread the virus is to like go to a church and meet up with your friends and like worship the Christian God, and it'll spread the virus. Everybody will be dead. Does that help? Did you get kind of the vibe of what spreads the virus and what doesn't spread the virus?
I think my wife just had an epiphany. You know, in the chat, she just said, laugh out loud, Dick.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to help because I know you guys are, you know, low IQ, and I'm the liberal. I'm putting on my liberal hat. I'm just trying to teach you what spreads the virus, right? If you're having a county fair, it's going to spread the virus. But if you have a county BLM protest, right, it's not going to spread the virus. So there you go. I'm here to help. I'm glad I set you straight.
No, you know? Thank you. I needed that because I clearly didn't see it. I mean, to be, you know, in all seriousness, I have no problem with people protesting. They had the right to protest. I'm just saying, again, we're very naive to think that that did not contribute in some way. That why in all of these states, so many states, the age group that had the biggest spike in cases was like 20 to 30 year olds, right? I mean,
right.
They can blame the bars all they want. Not all those people go to bars and drink.
Well, they're millennials. Drinking among millennials is down big time. Millennials don't drink as much as they past generations. It's a fun fact. You might not think that. There's a lot of binge drinking, but there's not a lot of going to social bars and drinking. It's down.
Kelly just brought up a great point in the chat. Remember when we were protesting the lockdowns and there were really no spikes and the right was treated as if we were going to be the cause of the second wave, then Black Lives Matter riots happen in Antifa, and we cannot criticize them for rioting for 2 months. Well,
so Kelly, I don't know. Maybe you didn't get it. If you were going to protest a lockdown because your small business went out of business, that spreads the virus. But if you're going to protest, you know, Trump, that doesn't spread the virus. You got to learn this, Kelly. I know you right-wingers. They don't teach you this on Fox News. But if you're doing anything that's not politically approved, it's going to spread the virus. And you're going to kill your grandma. You're going to kill your grandma. You know, stay at home, save lives, because you're going to kill grandma. Unless you were going out to twerk in a mass public gathering, then your grandma's alive. She'll actually thank you for it because you're erasing her sins of white privilege and slavery. Your grandma was probably a slave owner. Actually, the more I think about it, Kelly, your grandma was probably a slave owner, so she probably should. Well, I don't know. We'll leave it.
Oh my! I'm gonna take a quote from Dane's favorite Republican congressman from Texas, Crenshaw.
Oh,
I just listened to an audiobook the other day, and I'm just
Crenshaw.
this is just some advice for people out there. There's a line in the book that really stuck out at me, and I even when I was listening, because I don't read books, I listen to audiobooks. I wrote it down. It was be still, delay your reaction. This is in response or in regards to the people who are just outraged by just about everything they see on TV. Be still, delay your reaction, be skeptical and consider alternate possibilities, hold multiple scenarios in your head at the same time. So that's all I'm advising people. Consider alternate things of what is being spewed to you by whatever network you watch. Because again, I don't watch Fox News. I occasionally will turn on Tucker Carlson. I've literally watched him probably once in 2 months. I don't watch Sean Hannity. I can't say I'm his biggest fan. Just do your own research and just remember in this day and age, if you think whoever is behind that mic doesn't have some sort of bias or agenda one way or the other, even if they're considered a hard news anchor, just remember that. Just again, do your own research there.
I have one more example. If you're going to a Baptist church, you're probably going to spread the virus. If you're going to an Episcopalian church, there's no virus being spread. Probably because there's nobody there because it's an Episcopalian church. And I don't even think they have attendees anymore. But still, you're safe to go. There's no virus, right?
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. What a way to – we saved the spicy stuff for the end. I don't know what I was thinking. I apparently have held that inside for quite some time, and I had to let it out. It's because honestly, it just shocks me how I have not seen that push or mentioned as much as one would think. I don't know why people can't figure this connection out.
Can we end this by just me saying one thing? You know, one of the most rich, ironic things is that the left wing considers that there are like rebellions. They're fighting the establishment, right? Because they have in their minds that this is the 1960s, and the conservative squares of the establishment, and they're the loosey-goosey radicals. But, you know, when everything from Nickelodeon to like the Oreo Corporation to the Goldman Sachs Human Resources Department is, you know, repeating your slogans and phrases and that, you should really ask yourself, am I really the revolutionary? If like SpaghettiOs is taking a stand for the cause that I'm advocating, am I really revolting against everything? If every major Fortune 500 company is taking a stand in whatever political cause I'm advocating on a particular day, am I really that brave? you know?
Especially, really, yeah. It's easy to do it after the fact while everybody else is doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I really that brave? Or am I, you know, if like, I don't know. I tend to think like whatever Goldman Sachs says to do the opposite of. And if Goldman Sachs is like arguing for something, this is the modern left. This is my problem with the modern left. You know, like 20 years ago, they were against imperialism. They didn't want us invading foreign countries. Now the modern left is like, no, it's okay. You can blow up foreign countries like Syria and Afghanistan and Libya, but just make sure the person pushing the button to you know, have that drone blow it up is, you know, a minority, like gay or transsexual or black or something like that, right? Like, you know, it's okay that we have a massive, you know, defense establishment that's taking billions of dollars and using it to blow up Middle Eastern countries. But just make sure that the CEO is a woman, because woman power, rawr, right? That's the left today. And I don't know, whatever. Okay.
No,
okay, guys.
No, one final point I do want to make, because I just said I don't watch Fox News. I do want people to know that I literally have CNBC in my office on all day. So I guess if I get in my news from anywhere, it's CNBC. And what's interesting as of late is how much they're pushing a lot of what the mainstream media is pushing with a lot of these companies. And now there's like a big Facebook boycott of advertising and all this. It's just I do find it very fascinating how all these companies, it's easy after one company does, oh, let's follow suit. We're going to follow suit. We're all going to do the same thing. It's like, how sincere do we really think they are about some of this stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I
when it's politically convenient to post this on your social media page and on your website and what you're going to do. Really? Listen. Actions speak louder than words. People, remember that.
All I know is if you put on the black square on your Instagram, you're immune from COVID-19 for at least 3 days. I read that in Harry Potter. I actually didn't read it in Harry Potter. I watched it in the movies. I haven't read a book in 30 years. But actually, I didn't even watch the movie. I just, you know, I heard that on Twitter. I didn't even read the Twitter. I read the audio version on Twitter. But if it came from Harry Potter, it has to be real. Wait. Hold on, like breaking news. J.K. Rowling, she insulted trans people. I'm sorry, it's canceled. It's canceled. I'm going to cancel myself. We got to cancel this episode. I didn't realize that Harry Potter was canceled and J.K. Rowling was canceled. So therefore, everything's canceled. It's all canceled.
They're not a very forgiving bunch now, are they?
No. Harry Potter, actually, the reason I'm making fun of Harry Potter, right, is that everybody on the left, they love Harry Potter, and it forms their core, their moral universe, because they haven't read a book that's deeper than a children's book. But Harry Potter is actually a very racist thing, if you think about it. They're all a bunch of, like, mostly white school children, and the whole thing is about, like, whether they have magic in their blood, right? And you have to have the blood strain in order to be a magician. That's a little out there. I mean, that's sketchy in my opinion. It's very like, there was another group that was all about the blood, and they ruled Germany in the 30s and didn't so well for them. So that's all I'm saying. I stay away from that Harry Potter, kids.
All right. I think it's a great time to conclude the episode. This one went a little long, but we saved the best for last. So hopefully, again, apologize for the early internet issues. I don't know. We apparently, on my side, got it resolved after the fact, so I'm happy about that. But we'll fix the podcast, and that's ultimately what matters. We do this through, you know, as a means to make it interactive, but ultimately we use this to record our podcast. So if you don't already, please subscribe to us. We're on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, pretty much any podcasting app. Subscribe to us, and please tell your friends. I think the show's entertaining. I've honestly, in all seriousness, I've not received any negative feedback from it, even when we've taken some controversial takes. So I think people do appreciate where we're coming from. I think actually the only negative feedback was last episode when I did I posted on that Trump group I was talking about earlier in the episode. And there are some people not too thrilled with us with some of the things we were saying about Trump, because we were just saying we're concerned that Trump might not win, but for the most part, we receive a lot of positive feedback. So that's
I think listening to this spreads the virus, by the way. You're not allowed to listen to MVRed. Definitely you'll get COVID-19. If you listen to like NPR for at least an hour, it gives you like, I think, a 14-hour immunity from COVID-19 if you listen to NPR. So if you're like going to go into work, listen to a little bit of NPR. Don't listen to this podcast. It's going to spread the virus. And you're going to kill your grandma if you listen to this podcast.
Oh, my. All right. On that note, we're going to conclude again. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back in a couple, few weeks, perhaps, with another episode. Hopefully, we'll see where Trump's at. Right now, the margin against 9 points nationally, closer in a lot of the swing states. We'll see kind of how news events and COVID-19 transpires over the next few weeks before the virtual conventions start, I think, in the second half of August. Any final thoughts, Dane, before we wrap this up?
Nope. I'm going to eat some snacks and go to bed.
Sounds like a good idea. Thank you again, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye.